So, good evening, everyone. I'm really happy to see so many of you still here with us in this last session of our, let's say, really rich first day of our conference. We are having a very interesting session here ahead of us. And the topic is quality measurement, assessment, reporting, and metadata. So welcome. Let me start by introducing myself. My name is Outi Ahti-Miettinen. I work for Statistics Finland, and I'm responsible for the quality management of our organization. Just a few words about our topic. So in these days, our organizations are operating in very rapidly changing environments. And we are dealing with really vital questions, such as what is the value added by our organizations to the society? And what is the quality of our outputs? In other words, how does our output meet the user needs and regulatory requirements? So how can we prove to ourselves and all other stakeholders our value and the quality of our outputs? So we are talking about very hard of the quality management here. And these are the things in our field that Denim was talking about when he said that we can't manage things that we can't measure. And not only to measure in our case, but also how to report, communicate, and promote the results to the public. So we have six presentations to one cancellation about different methods, models, and examples of measuring different aspects of quality and about how can we improve our capability to measure assessment and reporting the quality of our outputs. So this is a speak talk session. We have only about 5 minutes for each talk and there is no time planned for discussion. Luckily, we will go next to the welcome receptions that I hope we can continue the discussion during the evening. So I don't want to take any more time from the presentations. So I would like to welcome our first presenter. He is Simon Scott from OECD. So welcome, Simon. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Outi. It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope you're right about this being an interesting session. We'll see. My question is, how do we really know whether a given statistic is correct? Now, we have the fundamental principles, and we have codes of practice, and of course we've got the GSBPM, but all of these only tell us how statistical systems should operate. They aren't tests of the final product. And we also have quality frameworks, but to me, these now define quality so broadly that the question of accuracy almost gets lost. No current document really helps a citizen decide whether to trust a given number. And in these days of fake news and rubbery figures, I don't think that's good enough. We need a checklist of the characteristics of reliable numbers. And I'm going to make a start on this right now, considering measurability, measure, and measurement. Now, by measurability, I mean, is the thing being measured even able to be measured accurately? Countable objects are easy, but qualities and moods can only ever be approximated, and any numbers on them should be taken with a grain of salt. And future things are inherently unmeasurable. So projections of any kind should be taken with a larger grain of salt. And we should always check for whether complete information was even available, because very often it isn't. You find that only a sample could be looked at, or the evidence available was secondhand, or had some other inherent limitation. Now, by measure, I mean a statistical yardstick, like adults, employed persons, exports, or business confidence. These are all statistical measures, but it's a lot easier to identify an adult than to identify business confidence. And even exports can be valued in different ways. They can be valued gross, or they can be valued at the value added added in the exporting country, for example. So with regard to statistical measures, we should put greater trust in the accuracy of figures relating to measures that are simple and unmistakable, and where the units and points of measurement are clear to us. Now, as statisticians, we may be dealing with a measurable quantity and using a sound measure, but we can still muck it up at the measurement stage. Good measurement is done objectively by enumerators, not subjectively by the people being enumerated. And the enumerators should be unbiased. They should not be working for a body that has a vested interest in the result of the measurement, and they should not themselves have a bias or a preference for one result or another. And if the measurement process generates feelings of pride or shame or expectations of penalty or reward in the enumerators or the people being enumerated, the respondents, then the figures are not to be trusted. Anyway, these are just a few quick comments, but I hope you can see why I think it's time we had some objective criteria to help citizens judge which data they can trust. Those criteria could also help statisticians decide which data were really worth collecting and help the public separate knowledge from opinion and speculation. And this could also make a contribution to public debate. If opponents can agree on some facts, then arguments can focus more on real preferences and less on guesswork and confected arguments. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Simon, for your interesting presentation. I couldn't agree with you more on the need of accurate measure and communication of the quality of the data. So we will look forward seeing your work ahead of you and waiting for the checklist to come. So the next presentation, Angelos Vuldis from European Central Bank. Welcome, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Uti. Good afternoon to everybody attending this session. My name is Angelos Vuldis. I'm working in the field of financial stability statistics, both from the macroprudential and the microprudential side. And I will talk about cross-validation as a method of quality monitoring, and I will argue that this method is extremely important, especially for banking statistics. James before mentioned that if we measure the same quantity as other reliable sources, then we have a confirmation that our statistics are of some quality. So I will follow up on this idea here. So let me put first into the discussion into the context of the bank statistics, which have proliferated a lot since the eruption of the banking crisis approximately 10 years ago. So we have a lot of data sets which sometimes cover similar aspects of the financial sector. So in this context, data quality monitoring using cross-validation could be, and I'll try to argue and explain how it can be substantially enhanced by cross-data comparisons, because cross-data comparisons can allow us to detect quality issues that are related to sampling, coverage, and scope. And these issues cannot be identified when we use our usual internal consistency checks, which check that A plus B equals C, or that some value is positive or negative. So comparing our data with external data sets which measure something similar is a very effective way to ensure data quality. I'm working on a data set at the ECB, which is called the CBD data, Consolidated Banking Statistics, which provides information about the banking sector in Europe across many dimensions of the activities that banks are undertaking and the risk. And we have a data quality framework, and so here I'm going to talk about cross-validation as a method of monitoring data quality. And I will present two examples in which we compared the CBD data with two other data sets and what insights this offered us. The first example is we compared the CBD with a supervisory bank statistics, which is a data set which is collected for micro prudential supervision. Which differs with respect to the consolidation methods that are applied. Namely, in the supervisory bank statistics, data are consolidated at the Eurozone level rather than at the country level as in the CBD. So this leads to, for example, in a small country like Slovakia, that we have all significant institutions there being subsidiaries of other institutions residing, for example, in Austria or Italy, that we have a zero amount of total assets in the supervisory bank statistics, while we have, of course, a positive number in the CBD. So we can here formulate some logical relationship between the data that exists in the two data sets. We can always say that the data that we have in the CBD should be higher than the data that we have in the supervisory bank statistics because of this consolidation difference. And indeed, we found when we conducted the comparison that for a number of countries we had divergences, but we were able to explain these divergences, and this analysis also allowed us to identify some data quality issues, some exceptional cases in which this logical relationship that I explained before was not confirmed. But this was for some exceptional reason. For example, in one case, we had a bank in a rundown mode, which was not reported in the one data set compared to the other because of some methodological underpinnings of the two data sets. So this comparison allowed us, first, to identify data quality issues, second, to enhance our methodological framework, and third, to provide guidance to the users on how optimally to utilize the two data sets. The second example, we compared the CBD data set with another data set, which is collected by another institution, the Bank of International Settlements, and these are two data sets that look at the interconnectedness between the financial sectors of different countries. So it is very critical for contagion and interconnectedness analysis, which was lying as one of the roots of the financial crisis. So here in this case, the difference with the previous one is that we cannot formulate an ambiguous logical relationships because there are a number of conceptual differences between the two data sets, which here I refer to as consolidation, perimeter, or scope of instruments differences. But still, combining this conceptual exploration that we did with a quantitative one, we were able to identify the main driver between the differences in the two data sets, which in this case is the perimeter of consolidation, which in one case is the prudential perimeter, in the other case is the accounting perimeter. When we compared the differences between the two data sets, we found that the left tail is very highly skewed, and the only reason that could lie behind this distribution of differences is this perimeter of consolidation, because all the other differences are within a specific perimeter of consolidation. So this is the only one which is somehow unbounded and can lead to such large differences. So to conclude, The aim of this paper was to show cross-validation, that cross-validation is a method that is especially promising to identify data quality issues in banking statistics where because of their complexity and the effect of the different valuation methods used, can use to large divergences even when we measure the same things, and they are quite sensitive to some of our methodological assumptions. Thank you very much. And I would like just to say that I would like very much to continue this discussion bilaterally afterwards for everyone who is interested. Thank you.
Thank you, Angelos. Yes, the coherence and comparability of statistics are key quality elements for all official statistics. And thank you for your interesting presentation and letting us ask an introduction to your cross-validation methods. You explained to us how it could be very useful, hopefully. Also, other official statistics, not only the banking statistics. So our third presenter is Irina Meinke from Federal Statistical Office, the STAT. Welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay, coming to our third topic, supporting the compilation of quality reports. More precisely, I would like to make three proposals of improvements to guidelines on quality reporting. So let's start right away. Quality reports are, amongst others, subject to European standards, which are described in the respective European guidelines for quality reporting. So when working closely with these guidelines, three possible improvements to these guidelines have been identified, which I want to present to you very shortly and briefly, and more information you can find in the paper. So first, what are our experiences with quality reporting? Just very briefly, and it's just an extract. So we have implemented quality reports since 2005 for almost for every statistics. And 2 years ago, we have implemented a huge review process of our national quality reports. So 100 quality reports have been reviewed by the quality unit. And last year, during two expert missions to Azerbaijan, we have intensively discussed five ESQRS quality reports, so the detailed quality reports, very intensively with a lot of time. And thanks to the open and fruitful discussion with the Azerbaijani colleagues, but also thanks to our experiences during the review process of 100 quality reports, we gained important insights about which guidelines and which concepts need further improvements in order to help the subject matter departments to better compile the quality reports. So this was our basis, or our experiences. So the first proposal for improvement is the following. So we observed that working with these guidelines put down in the running text is not always easy to handle. So the guidelines were put by us in form of a checklist with a tabular structure. And the checklist provides two options to check. The first option is the guideline applicable? So that means if a survey is exhaustive, then the concept on sampling error is not applicable. So you can leave it out. And the second option, which you can check, is if the guideline is fulfilled. So not fulfilled means that the statistical unit did not provide the relevant content asked for by the guideline, but the statistical unit should have filled it out, in fact. So for example, the concept on statistical definitions is always applicable and should always be filled out by every statistical unit, no matter what the statistic is. Is it exhaustive or just a sample? So This is the second option to check. So in summary, the checklist helps the compiler to get a better overview which different aspects of the guidelines are relevant for the compiling of quality reports. And if there's a review process implemented in the office for the quality reports, also for the reviewer, it helps to get a better overview. So this is the first proposal of improvement to the guidelines. The second one concerns the content of the guidelines. So we were working with the guidelines, and we sometimes felt the guidelines are not precise enough, the European guidelines, for example. And further specifications of the guideline need to be provided whenever necessary to the statistical statistical domains. So these specifications include, for example, explaining different terms like measurement or error, or providing concrete examples. A guideline of the quality report might say, okay, please provide actions to prevent measurement error. So we said, okay, what are the actions? And we provided examples for the actions in order to be more concrete for the statistical units. So finally, our third proposal for improvement is to provide standard text. A number of concepts can be identified in the quality reports for which a standard text could be provided, for example, by a centralized unit like a quality unit. For example, the data revision policy is very well suited for standard text. As the guidelines for the quality reporting, they ask for a general description of a general revision policy adopted for the whole organization. It is very well suited for a standard text. So just one centralized unit writes down, explains the general revision policy, and not each and every statistic has to write a short text about the general revision policy. So time is saved, and the general standard text is well formulated, and this is more comfortable for the compilers and for the statistical units. So to sum up, in summary, we have three proposals for improvements for the guidelines. Transfer the guidelines into a checklist, specify the guidelines with concrete examples, and provide standard text. That's it for the moment. You can read more in the paper, and thank you for your attention, and please come to me, and we have a discussion if you wish. Thank you.
Thank you, Irina. It seems that the quality reporting is for the statistical subject matter expert is challenging in all over the world. So thank you for sharing your experience. For any help we can provide the experts in reporting. So the next speaker, we have Basile Samara from Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics. Welcome, Basile, the floor is yours.
We will talk about the quality reporting improvement depending on the GSPBM, Palestinian experience. BCBS follow various technical and methods for assessing the quality in the statistical, included the preparation the data quality reports of the survey. The beginning was in 2011 quality reports, but these reports they are prepared after the completion of the statistical survey. In 2015, the quality reports were developed and updated accordance with the GSBBM. It's covered many process and sub-process in all phases. These reports is contribution to solving the problem that may face the project management and documenting the results of results of monitoring data during the project cycle. And these reports are updates and developed in 2018 to link it by the quality dimension. working process in operation and data quality reports is based on the preparation for partial quality reports, including the 8 phases of JSPBM, and the 9th phase associated with the assessment is overlapped of the with the other phases. Each report contain operation indicators, notes, follow-ups, and follow-ups results. The project management is provided with the important strength and opportunity for improvement, for recommendation to take appropriate action to improve the quality during the current and the next project cycle. With the completion of the project, a final report will be prepared documenting all notes and recommendations related to the survey to be used during the future session of the survey. We calculate the commitment achievement quality on all phases, but in 2018 we calculate commitment. We will work to calculate the percentage of achieving the dissemination dimension of equality in statistical survey, and we will use the radar chart that used in the DSAB to demonstrate the commitment to achieve equality dimension. Future work deriving more indicators to measure the other dimension of quality and monitoring and evaluation of all statistical activities carried by BCBS. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for your interesting presentation, how you merged this GSBPM and your reporting. And go ahead. So the next enthusiastic presenter is Desislava Nedjakova from Swiss Federal Statistical Office. Welcome.
Thank you. So I will briefly present you how we do measure burden at the Swiss Federal Statistical Office and what we do in order to reduce burden. So the context in which we find ourselves, in recent years, the Swiss Federal Statistical Office was in very difficult political context with lots of demands in order to reduce survey burden. Reduction of burden and data collection costs take a prime place in the evolution of our official statistical system. So there is really a need for a systematic way in order to measure burden in our office. What are our main objectives? The first one is to elaborate a system for measuring response burden in order to improve and maintain the quality of the produced statistics. We also want to define the field of the surveys for which we measure burden. Are these only surveys which are produced at the office or surveys which are done in some other institutions? We need also to examine the definition of burden. For instance, for business surveys, burden is for now expressed only in terms of duration and financial cost, and for household surveys, only in terms of duration. What are the main means for reducing burden at the Swiss Federal Statistical Office? So our office participates actively in harmonization of registered data in order to make it statistically relevant. And we also try to use systematically registered data, which is complemented by some surveys for the production of statistics. What other things we have done is that, for instance, in business statistics, we have abolished the business census, which was last held in 2008. And there is the profiling for large enterprises, and also measures have been taken to facilitate response of businesses. For household statistics, what we have done is that we have renewed our population census, which is now based on registers and which is complemented by surveys. Measuring response burden. So what we do in order to measure response burden? First, we have two rich sampling frames, which are the basis for our system of coordination, and we use them for drawing and coordinating our samples. The core of this system for drawing and coordination of samples is a program which is based on permanent random numbers and independent selection of units with Poisson sampling. The advantage of this system is that all information for coordinated service is centralized in the system. We have inclusion, selection probabilities, and also we know the number of effective selections for all the units. Results on repeated selections based on the selection indicators for the businesses selected and coordinated in the coordination system can be seen in our paper. So thank you for your attention. And if you have any questions, you can address me later.
Thank you. It was really interesting and a good reminder for us to remember that the cost of our outputs are not only our cost, but also the response burden for the respondents. And while we try to reduce our cost, we have to keep in mind to do something for the cost of the respondents also. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you too.
So the last talk of this day, we have Pasi Mattila from Natural Resource Institute Finland. Welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you. So good evening, everybody. I'm Pasi Mattila, and I work with agricultural statistics. And in the Natural Resources Institute Finland, we have developed the use of registered data to reduce the response burden on farmers in farmer surveys. And in my presentation, I now concentrate on one example of how we have proceeded here. It is also an example of how the development of the technology can produce new data sets that can then be used in the production of statistics. And now this data that we can now use is about field parcels of farms. In Finland, the Finnish Agency for Rural Affairs takes care of the farm subsidy applications, and they have a service in internet where farmers can apply for subsidies. And now for some years, the farmers have been able to draw the location of the crops within field parcels electronically in this service. The field area of farm is divided into parcels, and in a single year, each parcel can have one or several crops growing there. And if there are several crops, then the farmer must indicate where within this parcel the crops are growing. And now this farmer can do this electronically. And this data about the location of crops within parcels is then stored in the database of the system as a geospatial data. And now this is interesting when we are trying to define the area that is farmed as monoculture. It means that the same crop is grown in the same place in the field for several consecutive years. And this is usually, with most crops, considered negative because it may then increase, for example, plant diseases or pests in that field area. And if a parcel has only one crop in consecutive years, then it is clear whether there has been the same crop or a different crop in a certain part of the field. But if there are several crops in a parcel and only one of them is there in consecutive years, then we should know whether this crop has been in the same part of the parcel or in a different part. And here we have an example of a situation where barley has been grown in the same parcel in two consecutive years. Here they are 2015 and 2016, but in the different parts of the parcel. So the brown area indicates where the barley has been in the two consecutive years. And below, the blue area indicates the part of parcel where barley has been in both of the 2 years. So now we should find out how large is this area that has had barley in both of the years. And from the geospatial data that is now available in the database, we can process the area that has been with barley in both of the years. This method has not yet been developed so far that we could use it in mass production of the data, but we hope that we can make it in the future. Here is how we have made it so far from the parcel data without using this geospatial data. So there are different alternatives of the sequence of the same crop being in a parcel in 3 consecutive years. But I don't now go into this in detail. In the SAPM survey of 2010, the farmers were asked in a farm survey about how large area they have in monoculture. And now we have compared this area then later with the area that we calculated from the field parcel data. And here in the lowest row are the relevant figures that can be compared. So the last figure, the SAPM column figure, and the IACS figure that is the figure that is calculated from the field parcel data. And they are fairly close to each other, which indicates that the method that we have developed seems to be useful. So as a conclusion, this developed calculation method will be used to produce the crop rotation data, so the monoculture data. So there is no need to keep it in the farm surveys anymore. And this same method may be useful also in other kind of analysis of the crop rotation and the sequence of different crops grown in the field parcels. Geospatial data may also have some other uses too in the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Pasi, for a perfect example of opportunity that to improve many statistical quality aspects at the same time if we let ourselves to rethink our processes and take new data sources and technologies in use. So thank you. I would like to thank again to all of our speakers. This was really, really interesting session for me, and I hope we can do the discussion afterwards. I really want to thank you for being such perfect on timing. We are amazingly ahead of our time in this speed talk session. So thank you very much, and I would like to also thank for the audience to still be here at this time. It's been a pleasure for me to share this session, and at the end I would like to thank also the organizers of this really, really nice conference day. So I think we all can give a good big hand for all of us for the whole day, really long day, and we'll meet at the dinner downstairs. Thank you all.